Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sheila Scheuge, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not. But my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week's guest is politician and Kerry man, Michael Healy-Rae.
Any man who can turn her two legs out of bed, pull up her own trousers, put on a shirt, smarten herself up and go out. And like, I'm not talking about work, I'm not talking about achieving, I'm not talking about making money. I'm just talking about that you can go away and walk down the road, or I don't know, go to mass, go to watch a football game, go feed the ducks, you know, look up at the sky, do anything,
whatever it
is. If we have a dog, rub the dog and take the dog for a walk and talk to the dog, like simple ordinary things. If you can do that, sure, my God, you haven't do the lotto in your pocket.
We sat down to have a chat many months ago now, but I think his philosophy in life is certainly something we could do with a generous injection of, particularly at the moment. In this chat we talk about many things: his recovery from an accident in his 20s, his parents, why he doesn't need too much sleep, and why talking is so important. Here it is. So look, what is a typical day like in your life? Because I get the impression from you that you're an early riser.
Well, I suppose the one thing that I'd say, and it's the only advice I'd ever have for everybody, and that is I really value every day. And what I mean by that is that I have this awful, I won't call it an obsession, but like I'm very tuned into the fact that like if you're born and you live, we'll just say 100 years, which would be a great achievement. And I've had the privilege of knowing people who are very old. I know one man, he gave up driving earlier this year. He's 104. He used to go down and collect his home help every morning because she didn't have a car at 104.
Wow.
And he's in great health, but like that is, to be fair, the exception. So my point is that every day is a very finite resource. And today is a time in space that we will never again have. So that's why I, you know, feel so adamant about using every minute of every hour of every day. And that's why I do rise out early in the morning. I left Kilgarvan this morning before 5 o'clock, and like if I am going anywhere, like if we're not on the road at that time, you know, in fairness, it was not a waste of your time because like, you know, if it is 7 or 8 o'clock, sure, the best part of the day is gone at that stage. So
But is that just the day that you get in the car and you head to Dublin, or you're off doing something?
No, but
are you
like,
always up at five?
No, I'd be up before six anyway.
Would you?
Because again, like, and I see you, but I'd burn it at the other side as well. There's no point, you know, in leaving time go at night either. You should be, you know, you should be out at night as well and going to places and doing things. Because again, like the other night, there was a friend of mine. Simple thing, she was 50, and I know this girl with a long time. But I know her family, her husband's family. And like when I went to this party, we'll call it, like, do you know the way you really feel at home at some things you'd go into? Like everywhere I turned, I knew everybody. I knew the little young lads, and I knew their parents, and I knew the grandparents. And I was going around from table to table, and we were sitting down and talking about funny things that happened and having a laugh. And like, definitely one of the best things you can ever do in this world is laugh. And it's like when something goes wrong or if something bad happens, try to be positive about it. And if you can twist it around and laugh at it, because there is no point in getting excited.
And it's funny, it's laughter that kind of keeps you going through dark times as well, isn't it?
Sure, of course it is.
Yeah.
And it isn't that we're putting on a show or something like that. Like, if we can genuinely see the funny side. And I know, look, sad things happen and bad things happen and we all get hits and knocks. But we'll say what we'll call the other type of hits and knocks that happen. Like, I really, my mother studied psychology, and she always explained to me about this thing about putting problems in a box, you know, covering over the box, putting it away in a part of your head, and not to open that box until you want to. So you're in control of what's in your head, and that it isn't your head is ruling you, it is you're ruling yourself.
Are you good at doing that?
Yes. And I can have a desperate serious problem and I can park it, I can put it away in my head and bring it out when I want to. But otherwise, like, what's
that is a major skill. I think a lot of us, certainly for me, I don't know if I would be capable of actually tidying everything up in a box and saying, look, I'm not able for you right now. I think there are times and places you can do that. But sometimes do you not feel that the box kind of opens itself, as it were, and kind of comes at you when you're not ready and you're going, I don't want to deal with you right now, but you're here anyway.
But do you know what the word do you call that then? Why is it that some people, and it's a thing I know a good bit about, because I purposely put myself forward one time. I was a young politician starting out and I was on the Southern Health Board.
Yeah.
And you could go on to different committees. And I'll tell you openly, like, there was one committee that nobody wanted to be on. And that was called the Psychiatric Services Committee. And when I say nobody wanted to be on it, that was just, it was politicians really didn't want to be at that aspect. This would be, you know, 20 or 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But I wanted it. And it was easy for me to get on it because nobody else wanted it. The reason I wanted to be on it was I'd be interested in sort of, I always define it is if a person told me they were ill, one of the first questions I could ask them is, well, is it from the neck up or the neck down? Meaning, in other words, is it a physical or a mental illness? Now, 20 or 25 years ago, you didn't have half the talk about mental illness and the difficulties and pressures that people have now. But even that long ago, I was very interested in what happens. Do you know what is the difference between a person being, we'll say, bubbly and happy or suffering from depression? And again, it comes back to those boxes. It's how you deal with the difficulties in life. I deal with it myself in that I have people on the phone with problems. And the one thing I'm very respectful of, that every person's problem, no matter how big or small that problem may be, it is an awful big problem to you.
Yeah.
But when it comes to issues such as depression and the mind, will say, turning a person in a negative way, and that they can't see any positivity. They can't see, like, when they're out on the street, well, isn't it a lovely day? Do you know, it's dry, it's not raining, there's sun beaming down on my face. Happiness is a thing that you can have if you want it, but you must be open to having happiness. Like, you know it yourself in your own life. Do you know the way, if we're out with a crowd of girlfriends of yours now this evening, and they could be 10, but isn't there one person that will say to you, well, Sheila, if you knew the goddamn day that I had, and if you knew what happened yesterday, and if you knew who I have to face tomorrow. And in other words, every word that will come out of them will be something bad and negative, and everything is shite, right? But whereas instead of saying, well, isn't this great? We're all here now, have a bit of crack, have a laugh, have a joke. And in other words, positivity and happiness is something you can have, but you must work towards it.
Yeah. Come here. I'm connecting with so much of what you're saying, if not every single word, I'll be perfectly honest with you. Usually, though, for most people, it happens. There's something that happens in their life that gives them this sense of perspective and what really matters, what's real. Why am I worrying about this or not worrying about that or whatever? Was there something in your life that happened, or have you always been this way?
No, I wouldn't say I've always been this way. I had a bad accident when I was maybe 20 or 21 or something like that. I was laid up for a long time. And one thing that definitely didn't sit well with me for maybe about 9 months, I couldn't work. Right. Mm. And my work, we'll say at the time, was like I'd be driving a machine, driving a digger. So I'd get up every morning, get up on a machine, go away, do my day's work. And I was very happy. Like some of the best times that I ever had in my life was sitting up on a machine, you know, doing my work here, there, everywhere, working for farmers, working for the forestry, working on building sites. And everywhere I went, I enjoyed it. But for 9 months or thereabouts, I wasn't able to go to work. And now, what type of perspective did it give me? I had to go through rehab and all that. And I got to know people who were what I'd call a way worse than me and who were terrible nice people, but who unfortunately had, you know, all different types of misfortune that things happened to them, you know. And they had to get going. And when I say get going, I mean, I was in St. Mary's Orthopaedic in Grána Brothar in Cork.
Yeah.
And great people, great nurses. They had to be tough. They had to be, you know, it wasn't a holiday camp. And like from morning till night, your job was getting, for instance, walking. If it was limbs, you know, upper limbs that weren't working, trying to get the most out of your body again. I learned an awful lot during that about, you know, what happens in life and the knocks you can have and things like that. But my attitude was I was going to get going. I was going to go back to work. I wasn't going to miss a day. In other words, the first chance I could. So a very nice neighbour of mine, Cathal O'Sullivan, poor Cathal, he was a digger driver as well. So the only way I could go back to work, we'll say ahead of time, was that instead of being in a place where there was just one machine, there'd have to be two machines working. And Cathal's, like, he was driving his machine, and but his job was to take me from the car into the machine. And when I said take me, I mean up on his back, right? And like that's how I used to go into work. Oh. Every day he'd come around to my side of the car, he'd pull me up on his back, and he'd take me in, he'd put me sitting into the machine, he'd put the diesel into the machine, and fine, once I was sitting in the seat, I was able to drive away for the day. And and like it was such how do you call it, a big deal to get back to work again.
Absolutely.
And to be able to work.
So you weren't able to stand?
Yes, yeah, I damaged nerves, and like we'll say one of my legs wasn't working right. And
How long a process was it so before you kind of got back?
Well, I was 4.5 years on two crutches.
Okay.
And then I got down to one crutch and then braces and all that sort of thing. So it was a long haul.
Like, so it gives you a lot of time to think as well.
Yes, but I was very determined to get back to work.
Yeah.
And like, I used, like, when I got going better then, like, I was able to work away on two crutches. But like, again, it, like, I hate to see anybody with crutches because it's just, they're such, I absolutely despise them, because if we give 4.5 years with two things that we have to have with you all the time, like, it's an awful long time. Do you know, not to have your hands to pick up something, do you know, if it was only to carry a little two glasses of water,
sure,
no hands,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Simple things that people take for granted. But like, if people think that they have worries or problems, like, go visit a hospital, go to Dunleary, go out and see the work they do outside there, and meet the people that are inside in revolving beds, and that might know that they'll never again stand on their own two legs. They might never again get out of a revolving bed.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And like, think about how happy we are then that like, that you can, any morning you can turn your two legs out of bed, pull up your own trousers, put on a shirt, smarten yourself up and go out. And like, I'm not talking about work. I'm not talking about achieving. I'm not talking about making money. I'm just talking about that you can go away and walk down the road, or, I don't know, go to mass, go to watch a football game, go feed the ducks, do you know? Mm. Look up at the sky, do anything.
Whatever it
if
is,
if we
yeah.
have a dog, rub the dog and take the dog for a walk and talk to the dog. Like, simple, ordinary things. If you can do that, sure, my God, you haven't do the lotto in your pocket.
You do.
You know, if we compare it to the other serious situations that people have. But if I could like to impress something on people, it's the whole thing about people saying, well, you know, I'm depressed, or, you know, my mind isn't right. Like, your mind is like your bones. I really believe you can heal your mind. You can make yourself better. And I don't mean this now in a sort of a simplistic way or anything. I mean it in that it's how you actually come about it. My mother explained to me, she was in New York when she studied psychology, and she got a, whatever it is, a diploma or whatever you got at the time. But it was at night she studied. And she said there was so much involved in a person's head, and that people actually don't realise, you know, I mean, your intelligence, we use a minute part of our intelligence. My mother could speak 7 languages. She could speak and write Arabic. And like, if she wanted to, she could have, you know, learned another 10 if she wanted to.
Yeah.
But she made out, like, she had 7 languages. She was fluent in every one of them. And
incredible.
Like, oh, yeah. And it was really...
Does that rub off on ye?
Well, do you know what I used to always say about that? Because I had awful trouble, the other side of the coin, I had awful trouble in reading and writing. And when I was like 10, 11 and 12, I couldn't write my name.
Yeah.
I couldn't read the sign over the bar that said Jackie Healy Ray. I couldn't read it.
Okay.
And... what I used to always say to my mother, that the world was very unfairly divided. She could speak 7 languages and I couldn't write 1. But what it was I was profoundly dyslexic.
Yes.
And anyway, I got going, a very nice nun. I actually met her this weekend, Sister Regina, and she taught me how to read and write. But when she taught me how to read and write, I was just before going to secondary school. Yeah. So I had 2 choices, either get going, that's what I call getting to read and write, or else forget about school, because how could you go to secondary school and like not be able to write your name? Mm. But then I went the other direction. I went from not being able to read or write to being obsessed with reading. And like when I was, you know, 13, 14, 15, but think about all the catching up I had to do.
Yeah.
So I used to read books. I used to actually read them. I used to devour them, because it was such a new thing to be able to read these things that were nothing but a blur before. And all of a sudden it made sense to me, and the stories made sense to me. And it was like the famous 5 and, you know, all of Eden Blyton's books and all those, and these things, then I loved them. They were called Tell Me More and Tell Me Why, right? Mm. And it was just simple things like, you know, why does the sun shine? Why is the moon white? And what holds the stars in the sky? Is all these sort of, and then you had the big long explanation, and like the explanations to me were fascinating. And it was like learning. And I was like a sponge. I was soaking it all in, because this was all new to me. And because like all the other years, we'll say like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I wasn't taking it in at all, because I just, it meant nothing to me. So...
You definitely have had moments in your life where you've been faced with challenges. And it sounds like you, once you, I suppose, learn to navigate it, you then have this great sense of appreciation.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate, and I appreciate the simple things. Like I say, the fact that we're able to put on a pair of shoes and walk out the door, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And to anybody that couldn't do that, like, they know what I'm talking about.
And it sounds like you're, I suppose, with your mother being so highly intellectual and being able to access so many aspects of her own brain.
But life is so interesting. When my mother came to Ireland and, we'll say, married my father, the house that they would have lived in had no electricity.
Was she born and reared in America?
Yes.
Yeah.
But we'll say where she had been working up until then was in the Empire State Building.
Okay.
On the 72nd floor, I think, in the Syrian consulate.
Right.
But could you imagine leaving America and coming to Ireland and moving into a house where there was maybe no running water or no electricity? But like...
That's love.
Yes. Well, she was extremely happy, because my father was a terrible nice man. And and a very interesting man. And but like, again, that was like a challenge to her. And it was a case of, yeah, must get on with this now, you know. And
how did they meet? They met in New York?
No, they met in... my mother came to Ireland on holidays, and when she got off the train in Killarney, there was a very nice man by the name of Michael Jones. And he was like, he worked in a hotel, but he had 100 jobs. If you know, he was one of those men that was involved in everything. So he used to go up to the train station, and he'd attract visitors to go and stay in the hotel that he was working in. And then if that hotel was full, he'd fill other hotels, then he'd fill guest houses. But then he'd also, if he saw somebody looking for a taxi or a hackney, as it was called at the time, he'd say, oh, I have a hackney outside. And he had his preferred hackneys, or if it was a Jarvie with a horse. And when he saw my mother anyway, he said, do you know, where are you going? She said she was going out to Cooley's and Muckross. And he said, oh, I have a nice man now outside the door that'll take you out there. So out she went. And the first thing she was faced with was this man driving the car. And like she explained to me, he had, an iron jumper, white wool,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
A white woolen hat, right? But do you know a big blobby thing here on
oh,
the
yeah.
top of it?
I remember those well.
With red, a red splash of, do you know, on the top of it.
Right.
And she
the car
sat,
colours.
Yeah, so she sat in there with this man. And the first thing he said to Renia when they were going out, he said, what in the name of God is carrying you out here? And he said, you'll die a death of boredom outside here for the next few days. And he said, there's a big dance on in Killarney tomorrow night. I'll collect you and I'll take you to the dance. And she did. And off they went. And he took her to the dance and all that. And she had to go back to America then.
So come here, the man was?
My father.
Yes. So the confidence that... I'm sure, yes. Like, you know, a woman from America coming from the world that she's coming from, that would maybe intimidate someone else.
No, sure.
That he had no problem at all basically saying, come on now, I'll show you around.
Yeah, and I'll take her to the dance tomorrow night. And she said, yeah, that'd be great. And off she went. And, you know, my father did go to America for, I don't know how long, maybe. They got married in America in St. Patrick's Cathedral. And
So was that it, from that night they were inseparable?
They were, I think, yeah. They started to go out then, yeah. And he went to America, then they got married in America, and he stayed there. He worked there for, maybe a year and a half or something, and they came back to Ireland then, and that was it. So yeah. I suppose, like, your what would you call that? Your path, I suppose, to a big degree is worked out for you. But sometimes in life you have to make a jump yourself in one direction or another. And it is like they always say, you could go out the door and you could turn right and you could, you know, have some very good fortune. You could turn left and be driven over by a bus, you know.
Yes.
So like, look has an awful lot to do with
I'm
life
I'm so glad
as well.
You brought this up as well, because this was one of the things I was going to ask you, because I'm a big believer in, I don't believe in the concept of coincidences. I do think everything happens for its own
reason.
The good stuff and the bad stuff and the everything in between stuff. But I also believe that there are moments in your life where you're given an option and it's up to you to either embrace the opportunity and take that leap of faith and do that brave thing like your dad saying to your mom, look, come on, I'll bring you to the dance, or not. So do you believe there's a higher purpose?
Well, I do, I suppose, to the degree that sometimes, well, you make out your own look, right? Sometimes. But you have to be lucky as well. Do you know? I mean, you can have, in fairness, I mean, a person can have bad luck, but it's... one of the biggest things is, no matter what happens to you, it's how you react to what happens. That's what sort of defines you as a person. Like, the two people can have the same event happen in their lives, and the two of them can react completely differently. I mean, a person could have a bereavement, and one person's attitude, it could be, oh, I'll go away drinking and I'll never again draw a sober breath because I'm so upset over this, and you could waste the rest of your life. Another person could have as equally bad an event. I mean, I meet it myself with, you know, dealing with clinics, and I meet people who have had awful trials and tribulations, but they get on with it and they realise, look, I have to keep going, I have to be positive, I have to keep a brave face on and get on with life and make the most out of it. Mm. And And like I say, it isn't that we need to be setting the world on fire or anything, but you can just go away and do things that make you happy. I mean, if you like playing bingo, go away and play faking bingo, do you know? Like, if you like, do you know, the simple things, go out, play a game of cards with your friends, like nice things that make you happy. And isn't that great? But I must tell you a nice story about one night I found myself in Limerick. I was at something and...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My wife and a few friends, we were together and we were walking down the street and we met, just because I mentioned bingo, and to just tell you the funny things that happened. And we had maybe an hour to spare or whatever, and we saw all these, you know, more older people, and they were all going to something. So of course Nathie do me all, I said, lads, what's on at all? I said, where are you going? Yeah. And they said, we're going to bingo. Yeah. And Nathie in the world do me then all, I said, do you know, we'll all go to bingo for the hour or whatever. So I asked how long bingo is. So we went in anyway, and to tell you the way you meet people, and we were walking out anyway, and there was this terrible nice lady, and she was walking along. And she had one of those like little walking frame things, you know, with the wheels.
Yeah.
A lovely lady and whatever. Anyway, I was talking to her and she said, did you enjoy the bingo? I said, I did. It was great crack altogether, I said. And next thing she said to me, do you know, sure you would know my brother, she said. Do you see, he's above there, witty. So I was thinking, God, her brother's a politician. I said, oh, who is he now at all? And I had to start to say, and who's he now at all? Or what? No, I said, what does he do? Right? And she looked up at me. I don't know. He's still the president, she said. It was Michael Dee's sister.
Go away.
And she was so nice and so funny about it, where she said, he's still the president.
Oh, that's but, lovely.
But so you meet very nice people when you're out, and you can have crack and fun wherever you go if we're open to having fun.
Isn't that gorgeous, though? The groundedness and the down to earthness of that comment itself.
Oh, yeah.
He's still the president.
He's still the president.
That's brilliant. You
know? And it was very just matter of fact.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned it there, and I think for a lot of us watching the telly, you gained a lot of fans when you appeared on Living with Lucy with our mutual friend Lucy Kennedy.
You know, that's all in nonsense. They all just like looking at Lucy, and I was only coming in the way.
Ah, come here. I think it was the fact that obviously it goes without saying the two of you are, you know, you're coming from different worlds. But it just worked on telly. It was great fun.
Yeah.
And laughter, as you mentioned, it's absolute medicine, isn't it?
Well, you see, the one thing, how would I say this? And you would be in the same, you would be cut from the same cloth. One thing that I have no time for whatsoever in this world, right?
Yeah.
And like, obviously, I'd be very respectful of everybody's positions, right? And all that type of thing.
Yeah.
But like, to me, whatever type of a job a person has or anything, like, that doesn't mean that any person is one bit better than some other person, right?
Absolutely.
So in other words, one thing I have no time for is people who have notions about themselves, right? And as you know yourself, in the sort of a world, we'll call it the you know, the media sort of and all that type of thing.
Celebrity.
Yes, there'd be people that might have notions about themselves. Sure. But the one thing that's nice about Lucy Kennedy is that nothing could be further from the truth. Like,
sure.
She's terrible nice, terrible down to earth. And, like, that's why I'd say we probably get on, that, like, she'd be of the same opinion as me, like any person that, you know, big shots, like, she would have no time whatsoever for them.
No, no, no.
And like, people, you know, that'd be all about themselves and all that sort of all the rubbish. So that's why I'd say we got on good.
And but the slagging was absolutely hilarious, though.
But
you didn't let her away with anything.
But it was all that suit. Do you see the amount of time she was painting her nose? Jesus Christ, damn it.
You haven't seen the amount of times I paint my nose.
I'd be giving out to you too, sir. But no, she was nice and she was good fun and things like that. And so I enjoyed her.
Come here, we'll talk about your dad, because obviously, you know, such a legend in Irish life, in political life. We've heard many stories, those of us living outside of Kerry. I would have met him myself, actually, in passing in Killarney once. And I know a lot of friends in Kerry. Just it's an interesting one. I think those of us outside the county don't really get it. But what is it about the connection you have with your people? And I suppose it's a question that has a few layers to it. Were you always destined to go to follow in your father's footsteps and go into politics?
I wouldn't necessarily say, like, we'll say when I ran for the Dáil when my father retired, and I was selected to run, we'll say, for his seat. If he had been a younger man and if he wasn't getting tired, like, I was in no hurry to go anywhere, if you know what I mean by that. What way would I put it to? I was in the council at the time. I was driving a machine during the day.
Yeah.
And my father was in the Dáil. Like, if it could have stayed that way, I'd have been quite happy that way.
What was your reluctance, though?
Well, it wasn't a reluctance, but it was, like, as long as my father was there, I was quite happy with he being there. And it was only that, like I say, he was getting tired and he had given great service both locally and nationally, and the poor man needed, you know, to not be doing that anymore. So that's how I ran in at that time. And it was
out of duty.
Yeah, well, it was a great honour to be elected.
Sure.
And like, it was a privilege to be elected. And I think I'm always so grateful to the people that vote for me. But how would I put this to you? My father had given so much service. He couldn't go on forever. And there's a time to get in and there's a time to get out. And like, he was actually 67 when he got elected to the Dáil first.
Was
so
he?
Like,
right.
When other people were retiring, he was starting a new job, you know, and which showed the resilience of him. My father would have been actively involved in politics for, I suppose, for 50 years.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And like, that's a great lifetime of commitment.
Of course it is.
And service to dealing with issues and problems. But like, it's an honour and a privilege to have people that trust you and that they... It's the case of, I have a problem, I have an issue, oh well, I must ring up and I'm able to ask this person and relate to that person. That's not a thing to be taken lightly. And do not people come to with their personal problems and their personal issues. And like I say, you'd come across so many different things that are important to people, and it's your job to try and help them.
Do you know, I admire politicians a lot, because first of all, I don't know how you do it. I really, safe to say, could never find myself doing it, because I think, as tough as it can be sometimes to have in inverted commas, a public persona and putting yourself out there for opinion, public opinion, when you're in politics, it's a whole other game. And certainly in terms of yourself and your brother, I mean, controversy seems to surround you guys, or critical comments. How do you ride those waves and get through it?
You're like, there'll always be people that'll be critical. And like, my father always said, the person that never made a mistake never made anything. But like, you have people then who don't do anything, and all they do is criticise other people who are trying to do things. And I really take no notice of them. And I just wish that rather than being negative, that they'd go away. Again, come back to the story of not to 100. It's a very short length of time. So what are they going to use their lives with, oh, well, I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning making negative comments on social media about so-and-so. It could have been a person who missed a goal in a game, or it could have been a politician who they don't agree with their personal opinions. Sure, like, you can be critical of anybody. And
are you critical yourself?
I'd be critical of issues, but I wouldn't get fixated with it. Mm. I mean, in other words, a person can do something, I can have an objection to that, but I wouldn't be personal about it. And I definitely don't agree with this thing of, you know, insulting people and calling people names. And like, sure, there's other people, that's all they do all day. Yeah. And like, why in the name of God would you bother? Like, why would you let your life be taken over with, like, there are people like who hate Healy Rays, you know, and like, sure, fine, let them at it. But like,
and the same here. There's people, you know, who will probably never click and listen to this podcast because they can't stand the sight or sound of me.
Yeah, well, surely, yeah, but we'll have that.
And you'll have that. Yeah. And that's something that I think once you accept that and you get to that place in your life when you realise that, oh, everybody's going to love you and you're not going to love everybody else. Geez, it gets a lot easier, I think.
Oh, it does. And like, I wouldn't be one bit upset. I'd actually ask people who do that sort of thing, for God's sake, go away, get a mirror, look at it and start to think to yourself, what am I doing with my life? This is the most exciting thing I can do. Watch to see who's saying what, who's doing what, what statement has been issued by such a person. And then, oh, I'm the keyboard warrior going on making the dirty comment or the personal comment about how the person looks or walks or talks. For flip's sake, like, would they go away and do something?
I remember a friend of mine gave me brilliant advice a good few years back and said, you know, you should take a compliment and an insult in exactly the same measure.
Mm-hmm.
With a pinch of salt, yeah. And not be, let yourself be, you know, I suppose, elevated with the compliment,
yes. Or put down,
or put down, yeah, by the insult. Wasn't it?
It was.
And it's really struck with me because I think it's very, very easy to take the compliments and, you know, compliments on how you look or how you sound or what you're doing. But then when somebody attacks your nature or your how you look as a woman can be quite a tough one to take. I used to find myself really off balance with all of that. And I find it so much easier now. I don't let it in as much. It's, yeah, a work in process, though. It doesn't always work, but it's something that I do remember now, that I try not to, just try and stay balanced, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Your book, Time to Talk, is kind of exactly what we're talking about here. It's you wanted to capture conversations with people. Is it being lost a little bit now?
Well, it's being lost a little bit in that, like, if you were inside in a room and if there was 10 people inside in the room, or they could be at dinner or they could be doing anything, how many of them will actually be looking in the eyes of the person alongside them or speaking to the persons in the room?
Yeah.
Like, they might be texting somebody in America or Australia or somebody 5 miles down the road, but they won't be engaging with the people in the room at all. So, like, even where I'm from, Kilgarvan, like every other village, we had, I don't know how could I explain it to you, we had some of the nicest people that God ever put on the planet, right? Lovely people. I mean, everybody in Kilgarvan knows this. So like, I tell the story. Like, I could be going through the village and we'll say, my father's bar, which is my brother's bar now. If I saw certain cars outside the bar and that I'd know that it was such a person was inside, like, no matter what rush I'd be in, I'd pull in and I'd jump out of the car and I'd go in to sit down alongside that person. And all I might say is, well, how are things? And they'd start telling me something, and it was just because I enjoyed their company.
Mm.
And like, could you imagine young people now, you know, seeing a car outside a place and saying, oh God, so-and-so's inside, I must run into them for a minute. Yeah. And like, I used to love that. And I used to love meeting them and listening to what they had to say and maybe hopping a ball off them and saying, well, what did you think of such a thing? No, yesterday it could have been a football game, or it could be something about, oh, I don't know, it could be about girls, it could be about courting, it could be anything. And they'd have some idea on it. And like, you know, we had great characters. And unfortunately now, like every parish, an awful lot of those characters are gone. They've gone to their maker. And we miss them so much. The other night, I was going up the stairs in a racetrack, and there was a big crowd of youngsters in front of me. And I stopped them all and I said, stop there for a minute. And like these lads, you know, there might have been maybe 7 and 8 up along, maybe to 15. And they all stopped. And I said, do you realise, I said, you are the most important people in the whole world. And some young lad, he said, he was always a small little boy. He said, why would you say that? I said, well, for instance, I said, do you see these steps? I said, he'll be still able to run up and down these steps and be flying around. And I said, I won't be able to move at all. You know? And in other words, that they are the future.
Yeah.
You know? And like they're the teachers of tomorrow. They're the employers. They're the workers. They're the politicians. They're the decision makers. Mm. And like that's why when you go into a room full of young people, like you'll be thinking to yourself, well, I wonder what will they be doing? Where will they go? What will these lads do? And what will these girls do? And how will their lives work out for them?
Mm.
And it's very interesting. And like teachers must find it really interesting and exciting, you know, when a new school day starts, a new school year, like,
yeah.
And the little boys and little girls are brought in by their parents. And here they have then, like, it's my God, this person now, I must mind this person now for the next year, 2 years, however many years it is. And that you're their connection with the world
for
when
sure.
their parents are gone away working and the parents are gone home, you're the boss then of that child. And you must mind the child and protect the child and educate the child. That's a real important job.
Oh, for sure it is. So important. I'm listening to you with a big smile on my face because I suppose as a mother of a 2-year-old now, I'm all the more aware every single day how important it is and what a privilege it is to, I suppose, empower and guide them along the way. And, you know, you're who knows what the future holds for any of us.
But sure, that's it.
Do you know what? It brings me to sort of the end of it because I know time is really mm-hmm. precious. You've taken time out of your day.
No problem.
You left Kilgarvan crack of dawn to be here. And I really appreciate it, Michael. And I've actually enjoyed this conversation so much with you. I think there's been so much wisdom and so much I've connected with. But two last questions. What is on the list to achieve for you?
Well, I suppose, we'll say work-wise, obviously, like I say, it's an honour and a privilege when people vote for you, right? So, of course, you'd like to be able to continue in that role because I find that I like doing what I do. I hope that people feel that I'm doing what they want me to do and that I'm fulfilling the function that they want me.
But on a grander scale, you as a man, you as Michael, you know, separate even to your political life. You know?
Well, it's like somebody said to me, they said not too long ago, they said, where did I see myself in 30 years' time? And the very first, not being smart or anything, but the first thing I said was, I said, hopefully alive, right? That's the first thing, because that's the sort of basic ingredient.
Sure.
So number one, to be alive in the future, that's terribly important. To be healthy is important, and because like you're going nowhere without those two ingredients. And again, I've seen people grow older and, you know, really become fulfilled in that they're happy at what they're at. And like I do lots of other work outside of politics. Do you know the way you get people giving out then about politicians? Oh, well, do you know, in other words, they do should only be a politician and nothing else. Well, what I find in life when people come to me with problems is that the problems that they have, 9 times out of 10, I'm after having that problem already myself.
Yeah.
No matter what aspect of life they're dealing with, if it is business or if it is anything, if it is agriculture or whatever, I've had those things myself. And who better equipped to deal with a problem than somebody who has had the problem themselves? So I find that, you know, being involved in some of the other stuff that I do, that's good for me as a politician, because I'm able to deal with it, hopefully, in a good way, because I'm used to that issue myself. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to do. Yeah, I'd have lots of things, little projects that I'm at and things I like doing, and I just want to continue and always to be able to work. That's the big thing. And to be able to, and like, I don't care whether you're 70 or whether you're 80 or whatever, you know, that you can keep coming back to the story, pull up your own trousers. Do you know, if we have to have somebody else put on our clothes, that's bad.
Yeah, so it is the simple stuff, isn't it?
So once you can do that and sit in, take care and drive away down the road, that's a happy day.
Absolutely.
And so just to keep doing that. And
well, that brings me then to wrap up there, because, you know, you spoke about it yourself. You mentioned the word fulfillment. Mm-hmm. What is personal fulfillment to you? As in, if you could maybe describe your dream day, the one that would fill you up on every level and make you feel good, what would that look like?
Well, because of the politics, when a person comes to me with a problem and if I'm able to help them, whatever that problem is, and if I feel that, yes, because that person came to me, I was able to do A, B or C. And no, believe me, it doesn't always work out that way, because a lot of the times you could have a problem that you're not able to help with. But you try, and the person knows you tried, so that's important. But the day you can help somebody else, that's a big day. And that's a happy day for me, right? And that's me doing my job as a politician. When I do things for myself and when it works, and like sometimes things work and sometimes things go right and more times they don't. And when they don't, I start to throw my hands up in there and I say, oh, sure, what the hell, I throw it anyway. And it could be some gamble you could take or something that you know. Like one time I'll give you an example of odd things, queer things, right? Myself and 9 other people one time, in our infinite wisdom, we thought it was a great idea. We'd grow hypericums. Oh. Do you know what a hypericum is?
I do not know what a hypericum is.
A hypericum is a type of a flower, a plant. Well, not really a flower. It'd be used in ornamental bouquets and all that sort of thing. Okay. But anyway, we were going to take on the Dutch at what they were doing very well. We were going to grow hypericums, and it'd be the same as taking an animal to the mart. We'd take our hypericums to the mart, which was auctions over in Holland. So we planted, we planted acres and acres of hypericums.
So you went in for this?
Oh, we went into this thing big time.
Oh, right.
And we were smart men, like. There was, and when I say men, there was 10 of us, like.
Okay.
And maybe that's what we were lacking, was a woman with a real brain, like. but we had these 10 geniuses anyway. And we grew acres and acres of hypericums. So the first thing anyway that hit us was a sort of every type of disease that hypericums could get.
Oh, no.
We got it. So we had to try and fight off this every infectious disease that was known to mankind. We got it. So we had to get over that. So then we eventually got our crop going well anyway. And then we had to harvest our crop. And this was very labor intensive. So labor intensive meant lots of money.
Sure.
And here we were bankrolling this thing anyway, but we were going to do well, like, because we knew what we were doing. The truth being, we didn't have a clue. So we loaded up our first lorries anyway and sent them off to the auctions.
Right.
And we were going to make money at the auctions in Holland. Now, the first thing anyway that would have to learn when you go abroad like that, thinking that you'll take on people that have been doing this for generations and that, like, a small little group from South Kerry, that we were going to go beating these fellas at their own business. Sure, of course, they knew that we couldn't bring back our hypericums because they'd be well rotten by the time we'd come back to Ireland. So when they actually went in, it's like selling an animal inside of a mart.
Yeah.
Like, the trolleys are taken around showing what the produce is. And it is a case of, well, this batch is here from Ireland, like, you know, who's bidding? Sure, all every fella needed to do was leave their hands down and nobody bid. Yeah. And, like, eventually, like, our stuff was sold for rock bottom price.
No.
So that meant then, every time we sent a lorry of hypericums, it wasn't what we made, but we actually lost on every load that went out. We were losing money. So one night we had a meeting in our local community centre anyway, and I think it was I made the announcement, lads, like, how much more of a beating are we going to get? Like, so we had to, the only way we could actually save our losses was to stop producing, to stop sending our stupid hypericums to Holland and just forget about it and plow out the hypericums and grow grass seed and start feed the animals like we should have been doing in the first instance, instead of trying to take on the Dutch at selling hypericums. And it was just one of those funny things. But there was nights that, like, we could have left the community centre and we could have left it in a state of total total depression, but instead we actually left it in balls of laughter because we had this idea that, you know, so what, we tried. And
isn't it great that you tried? All right, sure,
yeah. And I do know one thing, it is not advisable to go growing hypericums.
You've learned a lot through the process.
Exactly.
But isn't it great? And that's the whole purpose of life, really. It's, you got to dare, you got to go for it, you got to try.
Exactly.
And if
exactly.
you fail, fair enough, you learn from it. And as you said, you go to laugh about it.
Yes, and somebody in Holland made a fortune on the back of our work. And you know, more looked him.
Oh, brilliant. Kamir, a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
And thanks to you for listening. If you liked what you heard, please do tell your friends, your family. And if you can, take a second to rate, review and hit subscribe. I'd be so thankful. If you want me to chat to anybody in particular, please do get in touch. You'll find me on Twitter or Instagram at Sheila Shoiga. Thank you so much for listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.